welcome to another episode of Nashville Anthems, dissecting 80s and 90s country music. I'm your host, Melton McManerberry, and many thanks to the Mercer Brothers Band for providing the theme music for this episode. On Nashville Anthems, we're drifting through the landscape of 80s and 90s country music, tirelessly seeking the heart of what exactly it is that makes this era and genre of music work so particularly well. Through close examinations of the songs played on satellite radio's 80s and 90s country station, one at a time. Today, satellite radio has pointed our big wheels toward Ronnie Millsap's classic from 1980, Smoky Mountain Rain. So, if you haven't already, please do pause this podcast now and give Smoky Mountain Rain a good close listen or two. And you're definitely going to want to be familiar with Elvis Presley's song Kentucky Rain as well, if it's been a minute since you've heard that one, because Smoky Mountain Rain is undeniably strongly connected to Kentucky Rain. Finally, I'd actually recommend going back and listening to at least the first half or so of our previous Ronnie Millsap episode on the song He Got You, because that episode was really this podcast's introduction to Ronnie Millsap as an artist. And in that episode, we go deeply into how his specific style flows out of his own and 20th century American pop music's own rich history, referencing actually the connection between Smoky Mountain Rain and Kentucky Rain even in that episode. So we won't rehash all of that here, so it would be helpful for you to have all that in your mind as we go into Smoky Mountain Rain. By the way, I've got a bonus recommendation for you. This is completely free of charge. Go to YouTube, search for Smoky Mountain Rain, Austin City Limits, and you will find an excellent live performance of this song that you're going to want to watch all the way to the end. Because for the last chorus, Millsap stands up from the piano, walks out toward the audience a bit, and flashes between his jacket lapels the hugest belt buckle you've ever seen, with his initials RM in giant letters across it. It's epic. Look it up. You will not regret it. Also, gift ideas for Melton? Anybody? All right. Before we dive into the waters of Smoky Mountain Rain, let's first give credit where credit is due, with a big boost from Wikipedia. Smoky Mountain Rain was written by a couple of legendary Nashville songwriters who were super active at the time, Kyle Fleming and Dennis Morgan. It was produced by legendary producer Tom Collins. So Fleming and Morgan also wrote a couple of hits for Barbara Mandrell that you'll likely remember, Sleeping Single in a Double Bed, and I Was Country When Country Wasn't Cool. And each has written or co-written a bunch of other classics that are worth Googling. Now, legend has it that Fleming and Morgan wrote Smoky Mountain Rain specifically at Millsap's request because he liked Kentucky Rain so much, a track that he, of course, played piano on, as we talked about in the He Got You episode. But that's only a legend. When you actually try to chase down the source of that story, you find that it all seems to go back to this one source that itself doesn't necessarily sound that solid. The story sounds a little on the nose anyway, right? But regardless, the connection between the two songs is all over the songs themselves. You don't have to listen even that closely to pick up on that. So we'll get into all that. Well, anyway, making an appearance on Millsap's 1980 Greatest Hits album, Smoky Mountain Rain was also released as a single in September of that year. And, I mean, kind of obviously in 1980, topped the Billboard country charts. It also topped the Adult Contemporary chart. Now, the idea of Adult Contemporary and Millsap's place in it being something we tackled in the He Got You episode. But as far as the country chart, Smoky Mountain Rain was Millsap's fourth number one single of that year, 1980 being squarely during Millsap's long, extremely successful reign at the top of the country music heap. We went into all that again in the He Got You episode, so we won't dwell on it too much here. But make no mistake, Ronnie Millsap was the biggest star in country music when this single came out. So in this episode, we had the treat of examining a legend at the top of his game. So with all that said, let's finally get into the song itself and work through at least what I'm hearing in Smoky Mountain Rain that makes this song what it is. And brace yourself, because you're going to hear me compare it to Kentucky Rain about a million times in this breakdown. And I know I'm going to start sounding like a broken 45, but the connection here is so strong, I mean, self-consciously so, this is not something that Smoky Mountain Rain is trying to hide. The connection is just so strong that in many ways, Ronnie Millsap's Smoky Mountain Rain can just be considered a straight-up callback to Elvis's Kentucky Rain. So let's look at some of the specifics on that point. And we'll start with the most obvious, the title. Now, I don't know why Kentucky Rain was called Kentucky Rain, other than that the syllables worked nicely, but presumably we do know why Smoky Mountain Rain is set in the Smoky Mountains. That's the area of the country that can most naturally claim Millsap as a native. I want to point out here how good songwriters make lyrics sound effortless. Listen to how well the syllables of Smoky Mountain Rain sit in this melody. Let me just say the phrase as naturally as I can, then listen to Ronnie Millsap sing it. Smoky Mountain Rain.
Smoky Mountain
Hear that? Smoky Mountain Rain. Smoky keeps on. And the same holds for Kentucky Rain. Kentucky Rain keeps pouring down. I'm going to guess here that the Smoky Mountain location was chosen first, and the melody was written around it. That seems likely anyway. And actually, what I'm saying still holds if it's the other way around. But this is one of the things that separates average people like me who have maybe dabbled here and there in songwriting from professionals like Kyle Fleming and Dennis Morgan, and also the Kentucky Rain songwriters, they'd be Dick Hurd and previous Nashville Anthem subject Eddie Rabbit. And that's the ability to make vowels, consonants, and stresses feel natural when sung with melody, rhythm, and articulation. Anyway, but the title is our first clue that Smoky Mountain Rain was composed to be Western North Carolinian Ronnie Millsap's adaptation of Kentucky Rain. I think that one's readily apparent. Again, it's not like anyone was trying to hide or deny that fact at the time. But the most organic connection between these two songs is one we've already mentioned, and that's Millsap himself, because he is, of course, the piano player on both tracks. And definitely a lot of similar country-style piano licks pepper both of these tracks. The Smoky Mountain Rain. I waved it. Showed your photograph to some old gray-bearded men sitting on a bench outside a general store. They said yes. Listen especially to this arpeggio pattern from Millsap in Smoky Mountain Rain. I called to tell her I've had a change. Compared to a pizzicato string lick in Kentucky Rain. But admittedly, none of that is terribly remarkable. That piano style is very common in country music. We actually deep dove on that specific kind of lick in the You Had Me From Hello episode. But the most, pardon the pun here, striking connection is in the signature instrumental element in Smoky Mountain Rain, the thunder that Millsap creates with his left hand. And it's part of a broader category that I want to explore in this song, in both songs actually, that of what I'm going to call theatrical drama. So look at how we see this theatrical drama in the instrumental arrangement of Smoky Mountain Rain. So yes, the idea definitely starts on Millsap's thunderous piano. And credit to listener Steve Galen, by the way, who pointed this out to me along with the rainy sounds we'll get to in a moment. Steve had messaged Nashville Anthems on Facebook about the John Deere Green episode and just expressed appreciation for the podcast generally. So we exchanged a couple of messages about some episodes I was preparing at the time, and Steve has some experience with sound design for live theater, so he was quick to point out these, if you will, instrumental sound effects in Smoky Mountain Rain. So, thanks for listening and thanks for contributing, Steve. But you don't have to listen to me or Steve on this point. Here's Millsap himself.
But I do remember all those great songs. One particular song called Kentucky Rain. You remember that song? They still play it on the radio today. That's right. So whenever you hear that song on the radio, you know it's me playing the piano and singing along with Elvis. And I'll never forget, Elvis said, "Hey, Millsap, can I get a little bit more thunder over there on the piano?" Smoky Mountain Rain came along, man. I got to thinking about that session with Elvis. What a magical time it was. I decided to use some of the same thunder on my record that I'd used on his. A thumb away from L.A. back to Knoxville.
Not bad, eh? And hey, when the king asks for more thunder, what do you give him? And here's some of that thunder in Kentucky Rain. And here it is in Smoky Mountain Rain. It's quite remarkable that Millsap is doing all of that on piano. Each song could have used an actual clap of thunder there, a la the Thunder Rolls, but instead elected to let Millsap just have it on the piano. Imagine the confidence to break that out in front of Elvis Presley, by the way. How good does your piano thunder have to be not to sound ridiculous? Is there a conceivable middle ground there? But when Ronnie Millsap wants his piano to sound like thunder, thunder is what it sounds like. And I don't want to ignore those strings either, but we'll get to those in just a moment. Let's do also acknowledge the raindrop sounds coming from both the piano and the strings in Smoky Mountain Rain. The The same sort of thing happens in Kentucky Rain also, but it's less prominent on that one. And frankly, anyway, we're going to have an awfully long episode if we dip explicitly to the Kentucky Rain counterpart to every element in Smoky Mountain Rain. And again, credit to Steve Galen on this one. I would have pointed out the thunder anyway, since Millsap does it himself. And anyway, it's pretty hard to miss on the track. But the raindrop effect is a little more abstract, more atmospheric, and not as explicitly noticeable. But quite effective, right? Smoky Mountain Rain doesn't just make heavy use of rain imagery, but water more broadly. In addition to all the explicit mentions of rain, and there are a bunch, notice the tears filling the singer's eyes at the end of the first verse.
The tears filled my eyes when I found out she was gone.
Then in the second verse, after saying he's wet and cold and lonely, notice he wipes his eyes.
I climbed up in the cab all wet and cold and lonely. I wiped my eyes and told him about her.
What a great image that is. Wet and cold from being in the rain, he climbs up in the warm, dry cab, and he needs some clarity, needs to see where he's headed. So he's got to clear everything wet from his eyes, the rain and the tears. Good stuff. So there's imagery of repentance here, as the protagonist physically turns back east from the evil West Coast after a change in dreams. That's a great line, right? Not a change in plans, a change in dreams. But it is this singer's penance to make it all the way through these waters of his baptism in order to have a chance of restoration on the other side. So the song is, I can't resist, dripping with aquatic imagery, both in the lyrics and in the instrumental arrangement. And all in a very theatrical way, right? It's not a coincidence that Steve Galen caught this raindrop effect because of his background in theatrical sound design. This is exactly the sort of thing that's happening. The instrumental arrangement in this song reads less like a honky-tonk backing band than like a movie soundtrack. Another part of that, too, is definitely the go big or go home strings on Smoky Mountain Rain. They're all over the track, but the most in-your-face are these swirling lead-ins they do to Millsap's thunder in the chorus. Listen to this. As if the thunder weren't enough? No, not on a track like this. It leans into its theatrics to a degree that would have made Las Vegas-era Elvis proud. Now finally, on this theatrical arrangement front, they're not technically a musical instrument, but I do want to mention the background singers. This is very much a 70s thing, like you would expect to hear on, again, a Las Vegas-era Elvis track.
Smoky Mountain Rain, I'll keep on searching. And I'm holding Smoky Rain, yeah, holding Smoky Rain.
Not to mention Bob Dylan.
16 years, 16 years.
Bonus stuff in the arrangement. Voices added to fill something out that didn't need at all to be filled out. Bat out of hell level of go big or go home in this arrangement.
Smoky Mountain Rain, Smoky Mountain.
Now, in addition to the instrumentation and voices, there is also some drama in the timing and rhythm of Smoky Mountain Rain. One of the places we see this is in the song's use of double time in the choruses. Double time simply means the beats double up. You get two beats in the same span of time where you previously had just one. In a sense, that means nothing changes, right? There's a sense in which doubling the tempo doesn't really change the tempo at all. Kind of like shifting up an octave, in a sense, doesn't change the pitch. So it's a way to amp up the rhythmic energy in a way that feels natural. And that's what Smoky Mountain Rain does in the chorus. Listen to how subdivisions of beats in the verse turn into actual beats in the chorus. I'll count it out.
But tears filled my eyes when I found out she was gone.
1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4. And the song does this as the lyrics transition from disappointment to determination. Right as he wipes his eyes in that second verse, for example, and declares,
I've got to find her. Can you make these big wheels burn?
There's a little bit of whiplash there, right? And not just because he's asking the trucker to floor it. Especially in the first verse, try to clear your mind of all the times you've heard this song and follow this narrative like it's the first time you've ever heard it.
I thumb my way from L.A. back to Knoxville. I found out those bright lights ain't where I belong. From a phone booth in the rain, I called to tell her I've had a change of dreams, I'm coming home.
All right, now what do you think is going to happen next? You already know the song is about drama. Several of those elements we've talked about have already been introduced in this song at this point. So maybe he's going to turn around and find her standing just outside the phone booth, ready to embrace him and take him back. Or at least she's going to hear him out over the phone and offer him at least a warm cup of coffee. But the next word, the one that introduces the pre-chorus that starts to transition the tempo to double time, is but. And we quickly find out this is not going to be the song we thought it was going to be at first.
But tears filled my eyes when I found out she was gone.
Notice, too, that the pre-chorus, in terms of the structure of the song, comprises extra measures. So the verse, up until the pre-chorus, is 8 measures, 2 very clear groups of 4 measures each, standard power of 2 kind of stuff. So when Millsap sings, "I'm coming home," it sounds like we're about to hit the chorus, again, probably triumphantly, or at least happily, as this prodigal has returned. But instead, we get 2 extra measures that delay the chorus, delay any gratification, inject some suspense, and get us off balance for long enough for Millsap, and I guess writers Kyle Fleming and Dennis Morgan, dramatically to pull the rug out from under us, as we find out we've got a sad country song on our hands here.
I've had a change of dreams, I'm coming home. But tears filled my eyes when I found out she was gone.
But it's not just a sad country song. Back to that double time chorus, it has a particular flavor. As we've seen so many times, we have here a specific take on a relatable theme. This time it's lost love. More specifically, love that was lost because you waited too long to reverse course on a mistake. And then more specifically still, all that plus a downright inspiring determination to undo the damage. Will it work? Will he find her? The song leaves that question unanswered, and in my opinion, is all the better for it. So, it's probably worthwhile to take a moment here and acknowledge how much of what we've just gone over is and isn't present in Kentucky Rain. So, Kentucky Rain doesn't do the double time thing, although the feel of the song does dramatically shift between verse and chorus, with Millsap's piano thunder being one of the main ingredients that affect that shift. And there are extra measures in Kentucky Rain between the 8-bar verses and the choruses that I'll let you listen for yourself. But the story itself, I mean, it's a dead ringer. It's practically the same narrative. From the phone call to find out she was gone, to hitchhiking in the cold rain to find her, it's not overstatement to say that, in terms of the story and the perspective, Smoky Mountain Rain is essentially the same song as Kentucky Rain, just translated a couple hundred miles south and about 10 years in the future. And I mean, yeah, just to emphasize this point one more time, this strong of a referential connection from one song back to another, especially with the personal connection for Ronnie Millsap, goes beyond just influence and rises to the level of homage. I mean, especially given what Millsap himself says, and really Ronnie Millsap's whole adult contemporary retro R&B blue-eyed soul shtick that we spent most of the He Got You episode unpacking, we are justified in calling Smoky Mountain Rain Ronnie Millsap's loving tribute to Vegas-era Elvis Presley. All right, but let's keep talking drama. In addition to the arrangement and the timing and rhythm, we find some harmonic drama in Smoky Mountain Rain. But it's a country song, so not that much harmonic drama, right? So the basic chord pattern of the verses of Smoky Mountain Rain is 6-4-1-5. Now we're in the key of G, so that's E minor, C, G, D.
That he was going as far as Gatlinburg.
By the way, shout out to the podcast Strong Songs, which largely inspired this one. The first episode of that podcast was on the Toto song Africa, which host Kirk Hamilton explains is also 6415. 6-4-1-5 is a common progression. Really, there are several very common progressions that you get when you put those four very common, the most common, in fact, by far, chords in different orders. We talked about one of those permutations in the Carrying Your Love With Me episode. 1-6-4-5, the doo-wop progression. 6-4-1-5's close cousin, 1-5-6-4, is also super common. Basically a cliche. It's the Don't Stop Believin' progression, among many other songs. Now, a common feature of all three of those most common permutations, did you catch it? Is that 4 immediately follows 6. Here they are again. This is Smoky Mountain Rain. 6-4-1-5. This is Carrying Your Love With Me. 1-6-4-5. And Don't Stop Believin'. 1-5-6-4. That 6-4 pairing is what Leonard Cohen poetically referred to as the minor fall and the major lift. And we actually talked about that in the Carrying Your Love With Me episode, because the effect is very real. Now, 1 and 5 are pretty tame chords. They don't necessarily do a whole lot in terms of dramatic effect, but 6 and 4 do. 6 is the relative minor, the moment of darkness and doubt, the minor fall, if you will. And 4, which, by the way, only lifts one note of the relative minor triad by a half step, manages to have a totally different character, a reversal of course, harmonic repentance, if you will, a new beginning as the chord progression plots a course back to 1. And really, 6-4-1-5, by putting that harmonic whiplash right at the beginning, is the most dramatic of these common four-chord permutations. Notice how it's used in the first verse of Smoky Mountain Rain. So the first line starts immediately on that minor chord, and we have the image of the drifter starting a long ride away from those bright lights that turned out to be darkness in disguise. But a long ride to where?
I thumb away from L.A. back to Knoxville.
Back to Knoxville on the major lift. Back home. There's light at the end of this long tunnel that this major lift seems to support the idea of. A similar thing happens a couple of lines later. The dark desperation of calling from a phone booth. But why is he calling? And more importantly, who is he calling? Her. As his spirits lift a bit.
From a phone booth in the rain, I called to tell her.
This is a worthwhile call because of who is on the other end. Then, of course, again, the rug gets pulled out from under us shortly thereafter. But you see how even the chord progression in that first verse sets that table, right?
I thumb away from L.A. back to Knoxville. I found out those bright lights ain't where I belong. From a phone booth in the rain, I called to tell her.
And there's more dramatic harmony in the chorus. Actually, let me pause for a moment here and just acknowledge something we've talked about a fair amount. The fact that this verse and chorus make use of such a small arsenal of chords, and low-hanging in-key chords at that, are part of what makes this music work. We've regularly seen bona fide harmonic drama in these songs through only slight deviations from the norm. Because when the listener's expectation is vanilla, a candy sprinkle or two can really pack a pop to the palate. So in the chorus, that happens with a 3-chord on the second line, the same chord into which Millsap famously pops his left-handed thunder. Following the 1-chord, it sounds like this.
Smoky Mountain Rain keeps on rolling.
A lot of times you'll hear an out-of-key 3 major in that spot. Definitely a dramatic move. The in-key 3 minor packs a mellower punch. But it's a punch no less. It's essentially a substitute for the more common standard 5 chord, which in Smoky Mountain Rain would sound like this. Doesn't sound that different, does it? That's because a 3 chord is the relative minor of a 5 chord. So it's the 5 chord's emo cousin. But it is a deliberate harmonic move in this composition that adds to the sense of determination that this song and this chorus have. It feels like a, well, minor harmonic setback on this road to deliverance. So don't miss that it leads into a four chord, that major lift, once again, as the searcher clings to the thread of hope of his own determination to right this wrong. I want to note the melody in this spot too, because it's not something we've seen much of. Over this three chord, Millsap sings an augmented fifth. That's this interval. A fifth, or a perfect fifth, is a very common melodic interval, and it sounds like this. But an augmented fifth is a bit of an oddball, and it sounds like this. Millsap, of course, is a brilliant singer and has no trouble with that odd interval. Actually, there's another one right after it, shit that he stepped down, which again, Millsap nails without electronic aid, mind you. So this is, again, slight. An augmented fifth is not a big deal per se, and you'd be justified in harboring a suspicion that I'm only making this point because I wanted an excuse to say augmented fifth a bunch of times. There are some suspicious minds out there, I know. But the previous point holds, that in music that is generally harmonically and melodically simple, slight deviations from the norm grab the ear. And they do here. Falling and calling, the two primary actions of the song, emphasized with a slightly non-standard interval that has an intrinsically haunting quality, especially in Ronnie Millsap's voice. And boy, is this episode going to be long. We've still got a fair amount to cover, too. But this is a great song, a rich song, and it's a lot of fun to pick apart. Let's just take our time and do it. Like, for example, by looking at the major sevenths in the bridge that you had to know there was no way I was going to ignore. And the bridge is the only place that major sevenths appear in this song, which is actually pretty remarkable given everything else we've talked about and the era it came out in. But the arrangement saves them for its most pensive section, with the bridge starting on a C major 7th chord, that's a 4 chord, and pseudo-resolving to a G major 7th, the 1 chord.
I can't blame her for letting go. A woman needs someone warm to hold.
See what I mean about this song fitting right into Alabama's Christmas album? Let's keep going, though, because I want to say more about the theatrical drama in Smoky Mountain Rain's lyrics, and in Millsap's delivery especially. I already mentioned the Change of Dreams lyrics, which is just a brilliant move by whichever of these two songwriters made it. I like to think it was a Lennon-McCartney kind of thing, where, say, Kyle Fleming came in with a change of plans, and Dennis Morgan said, "Well, I don't know, Kyle, do you think I might be better as a change of dreams?" Because it definitely is. Plans can be cold and stale, but dreams come from the soul. And how relatable would this have been to Millsap's adult contemporary audience? Ronnie Millsap was in his late 30s when he recorded this song, not a youngster at all by industry standards. He was a guy with lots of experience by then as an adult. Again, we deep dove into this in the He Got You episode, but part of the secret Ronnie Millsap sauce is that he captured some aging boomer nostalgia that could look back fondly on Elvis while making its mortgage payment. This was a time when this generation was aging out of its wide-eyed phase and facing reality. Finding those bright lights weren't where it belonged. So it's a relatable, from-the-heart idea that not just one's plans, but one's dreams have changed. And the time to embrace that reality has come. Difficult though the journey and the seeking for the something new, or in this case old, may be. All right, I have to highlight this. Listen to the way Ronnie Millsap, playing the reformed dreamer, sings the word Gatlinburg.
He said that he was going as far as Gatlinburg.
Listen to all the emotion behind that word. Feel his eyes once again, if only temporarily, get wider. As he experiences a touch of hope, meager though it may be. It's something to cling to. This truck is at least going somewhere. It's something. It's a start. The only way I'm going to find her is to start looking, and Gatlinburg is as good a place to start as any. Let's go.
He said that he was going as far as Gatlinburg.
All right, actually, we are going to wind this episode down, but there's one more road I want to travel down, going back to the content of the narrative of this song. This is something I very much find in Kentucky Rain, too, by the way. It's the country trope of the heroic drifter. That the protagonist is a drifter is easy to see. From the very first line, we're told he's hitchhiking across country. In the second verse, he gets a ride with a trucker, in fact. He's calling from phone booths. He clearly has no home. Whatever home he had is back in L.A., and the fact that every drop of rain makes him have to wipe his eyes emphasizes the reality of his lack of shelter from the elements. Show of hands, how many of you have ever picked up a hitchhiker? Or would ever pick up a hitchhiker? Or would ever hitchhike yourselves? I don't know, in an age of ubiquitous smartphones, maybe hitchhiking is a thing of the past anyway. But I have certainly driven past hitchhikers in my lifetime, and I did just that. I ain't gonna lie. I drove past them. And maybe I should have picked them up like a true neighbor, Good Samaritan style. I hear you. Maybe that's something I need to wrestle with. But the truth is, right or wrong, in real life, we don't see homeless strangers on the side of the road as heroes. But we do in our country songs. Imagine if this protagonist were driving back from L.A. Doesn't have the same feel at all, does it? Still probably a compelling story, but there's some desperation present in Smoky Mountain Rain that would be missing in that version. Homeless, carless, the implication is penniless, dreamless, disillusioned, out of options, out of ideas. All that is part of the atmosphere of Smoky Mountain Rain. And there's no sense in which we are invited to criticize or question how this guy got into this situation, right? He's essentially admitted he was wrong, so it's a gut shot to us as well when he finds out this woman is already gone. We're on his side, unquestioningly. The side of this hobo, the nomadic seeker of purpose and place, this cold, wet, and lonely country music cliche. And part of what's going on here is a connection between changes in life and changes in geography. We've definitely noticed on this podcast how significant of a role geographic locality plays in this music. There are times when country songs practically don't separate these two ideas out at all. Think of All My Exes Live in Texas, for example, or Alan Jackson's uber example of this in his song Dallas. It's like, wait, is he talking about Dallas the city or a person named Dallas? Yep. So we've got some of that here. It's a rainy night version of that idea. That this dreamer was going to move back to Knoxville after fizzling out in L.A. seems to have been practically a fait accompli. That his lost love's change in location indicates her own change of mind seems also to be a natural conclusion. And finally, that this drifter will cease to be a drifter if and when he does find this woman, wherever she is, I think we're justified in inferring as well. Place and situation seem to be inextricably linked in this song and in this music. So, we are left to ask, what happens then if he never finds her? The song leaves that question unanswered, and thus, so shall we. I'm going to park this big rig for a couple of weeks, but not before we find out what song we'll be looking at on the next episode of Nashville Anthems by switching on Satellite Radio's 80s and 90s country station to find out what's playing. Let me do that right now. Okay, we're going back to the Judds. The song is One Man Woman. I look forward to getting to that one with you in 2 weeks. In the meantime, why don't you search for Nashville Anthems on Facebook or on Instagram and let's connect. And hey, don't forget to tell a friend about us. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.